This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. Ira Flatow will be back next week. If you have an aging parent or grandparent, you might have witnessed the effects of Alzheimer's or other age-related dementias that they can have on memory. Maybe you've also had this experience. A parent who can't remember your name can still remember the lyrics to a favorite pop song. Maybe they can even sing along for you. A new documentary, Alive Inside, examines why musical memories stick, even when nothing else does. It suggests that music can be a powerful tool for connecting elders to the people around them and for restoring a sense of self. Both of my guests today have seen this happen firsthand. Dan Cohen is the principal subject of this new documentary, Alive Inside. He's the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Music and Memory. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Great. Thank you, John.
And Oliver Sacks is a professor of neurology at NYU Medical Center and the author of many books about the brain, including Musicophilia. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Sacks.
Good to be back.
If you've seen the effects of music on memory yourself, we want to hear about it. Our number is 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet us at SciFry. And if you want to find out more about what we're going to be talking about this hour, go to sciencefriday.com, where you will find links to our topic. Dan, I want to start by playing a little clip from Alive Inside. This is a clip of a nursing home resident named Henry. Before we hear it, why don't you tell us who Henry is and what he was doing that day at the nursing home before you put these headphones on him?
Henry is a 94-year-old man who's been in this nursing home for 10 years. He has advanced Alzheimer's disease and basically has spent most of his days just really slumped over and non-responsive.
So here's the conversation your collaborator, Michael Rosato Bennett, had with Henry after he'd listened to some music.
Do you like the iPod? Do you like the music you're hearing?
Yes.
Do you like music?
Yeah, I'm crazy about music. You play beautiful music, beautiful sound.
What was your favorite music when you were young?
Well, Cab Calloway was my number one band guy. I like that. That's the holy, the holly, the hilly, the holy, the milly, the
And even if you haven't seen the movie, you may have seen this clip on YouTube. It's kind of amazing. Dan Cohen, what is happening there when Henry is listening to this music?
It just connects with his self, with his emotional system, which is still very much intact. And our long-term memories, as Dr. Sacks could explain better than I, we're still able to, ourselves are there. You can't, if a family member says, gee, I'm here, you know, listen to me, I'm your spouse, I'm your daughter, I'm your son, they may not recognize them, but play that music from the youth that has personal meaning, and they'll awaken and engage and interact.
Oliver Sacks, what do you see when you see that scene in the film?
I've seen exactly that with hundreds of people who don't have any direct access to their pasts, but for whom music can act as a bridge. So familiar music will often bring back the moment when they first heard the music and the people they saw, and it's not just the emotional impact, although that's crucial, but something about the brain's strange retention of music, which is very remarkable and uniquely human.
It is strange and uniquely human. What do we know about what's happening in the brain when this happens?
Well, when music is played or imagined, many areas in the brain get activated. Some of them are hearing areas, but some are visual areas, some are motor areas, many are emotional areas. There's no one music center in the brain. There are a dozen networks which hold together, and in this way, music is rather different from language. There are very specific language centers in the brain, and if those are knocked out, people can be aphasic and lose language, whereas it's almost impossible to lose music. It is very robust.
Is that why musical memories, though, stay longer then, because they activate so many parts of the brain?
Absolutely. And they, and especially parts of the brain which are not affected by Alzheimer's or memory loss in the ordinary way, parts of the brain which are concerned with procedure and performance. So essentially music gets played in the brain. It's a performance.
Now, Dan Cohen, you've obviously seen this happen yourself hundreds of times. Do a lot of Alzheimer's patients react like Henry did?
Well, not everybody reacts to the music. We may not be able to identify that song that will really help them recall and connect. So I'd say what I've seen with the feedback from hundreds of nursing homes that are using this is it's working, let's say, with people with advanced dementia, maybe 75% of the time. And the other 25 we're still trying to, we may not know that song. Maybe there's no family to ask. Of course, the person can't tell us what their musical preferences are. So it's a harder process to figure that out. And there may be other reasons as well why they're not reacting that we just don't know.
We're talking with Dan Cohen about the new documentary, Alive Inside. It also features Dr. Oliver Sacks, a professor of neurology at NYU Medical Center. If you want to join us, 844-724-8255. The power of music to unlock people's brains, their lives in some ways in nursing homes. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Ashe County, North Carolina. Hi there, Brian. Go ahead. You're on Science Friday.
Hey, enjoying the program. I'm a minister in a rural community in North Carolina, and I have found that often when I pray with folks who are in various states of dementia, there doesn't seem to be any response. But when I revert to songs, especially songs from the hymnal or part of our Methodist tradition, I'll get a visceral response, and wondering, is there anything I should expect along with that? Are there any other things that I should try to do, or is the music enough?
Well, I'll ask you first, Dan Cohen, to maybe comment on what Brian has to say, because I know that hymns are something that you have played for an awful lot of the patients you've worked with.
Well, certainly hymns, you know, for everybody, that music that has meaning can vary. It can be hymns, it can be rock, it can be classical. And yes, once somebody is connecting and that have that visceral reaction, you know, that has a residual effect. So even when it stops, the person might be in a better mood for hours after that. So you want to repeat that process as much as you can, as every once a day for an hour. That will then keep the person maybe in a better mood and calmer and less likely to require, quote unquote, an antipsychotic medication to keep them calm if they're agitated, which would be a big win for that individual.
I'd love your thoughts on this, Dr. Sacks, because one of the questions is what types of music resonate with what types of people? The minister says playing hymns for some people will evoke a response. Maybe it touches something that's a very strong belief connection to them. But in your mind, is there something different between religious music, classical music, rock and roll music?
No, I don't think there's any such thing as specifically religious or military or erotic music. For example, Handel and the Messiah said he made free use of contemporary bawdy songs from Italy, which were then put in a religious context. One thing which went through my mind, which is that in Jewish prayer is often intrinsically associated with music in the form of davening, so-called, where the prayer is done in a sing-song way and also with a rhythmic movement of the body. And I think these two things, the sing-song and the rhythmic movement, help hold it in memory, whereas just saying a prayer may not work.
In the rhythm, Dan, in the movie, it becomes so clear. The rhythms of certain musics just resonate with people who've sat slumped over in chairs sometimes for many years.
So, you know, we see this all the time, you know. People will start to dance in their chairs. They'll start to move. If somebody's really non-responsive at all, lying down, their foot may just start going back and forth, you know, to the beat of the song. Families love this because they want as much as possible to keep that person as they knew them, you know, alive as long as possible. So that's really a critical way to maximize their function, their self, their responsiveness.
I want to go to Jennifer, who's calling from Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Jennifer. Go ahead. You're on Science Friday.
Hi, great program today. Really enjoying it. I just wanted to make a comment about the power of music from childhood. I know you're talking a lot about the power of music with the elderly, but a comment I wanted to make was when I was younger, I think I was 7th or 8th grade, we had to stand in front of the class, terrifying, and recite the preamble to the Constitution. And I could not for the life of me remember it. The only way I finally figured out that I could do it was to sing it. And the way I learned to sing it was from the good old Schoolhouse Rocks. I don't know if you remember those little cartoons that would come on in between cartoons and teach kids about all different kinds of things. And one of them was they sang the preamble to the Constitution.
Yeah.
And so that was the way that I did it, was I stood in front of the class and I told my teacher the only way I can do this is if I can sing it. And she let me do it, and to this day I can remember exactly how it goes, and the Schoolhouse Rock. And
I think, Jennifer, thank you so much for the story, and I think that an awful lot of people did learn from Schoolhouse Rock. But it's a great story about using music, Oliver Sacks, to remember anything.
Yeah. A lot of kids learn the alphabet as A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and sort of it becomes a little tune. And anything is more easily remembered if put to music. And this is also so in work and various jobs, especially if they involve something rhythmical.
Is it the same thing that allows Alzheimer's patients to be activated by music that would allow a young person to use music to then remember something complicated?
I think it is similar. By the way, on the question of beat,
yes,
and responding to the beat, my own encounter with the power of music was originally with the patients with Parkinson's and sleepy sickness, whom I wrote about in Awakenings. And these were people who could not voluntarily make a single movement or sound, but they would respond to music. It didn't have to be familiar or meaningful, like the music for Alzheimer's, but it had to have a strong beat. And human beings cannot resist responding to the beat. You see this from earliest childhood. It's specifically human. I once mentioned this, and a woman in the audience said, "Now I know why I can't teach my dog to dance."
Specifically human indeed. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Oliver Sacks and Dan Cohen about music and memory. We want to hear some of your stories as well at 844-724-8255. We're going to be right back after this short break. This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking this hour about the power of music to restore memory, at least temporarily. My guests are Dan Cohen. He's principal subject of a new documentary, Alive Inside. He's also executive director of the nonprofit Music and Memory. And Dr. Oliver Sacks is here. He's professor of neurology at NYU Medical Center, and he's the author of many books, including Musicophilia. We're going to take some more of your questions in just a moment. But Dan, both you and Oliver Sacks have spoken so convincingly, and the movie makes it so convincing indeed that playing music for elderly Alzheimer's patients is just something that can activate them, that can make the quality of their life better. Why on earth isn't it in every single nursing home in America?
Change comes slow, I think. And nursing homes are very busy. The administrators tell me their plate is full. And there's no budget for this. The government does not reimburse this. They'll spend $1,000 a month for an antidepressant, as mentioned in the movie. But gee, a cheap, you know, $40, $50 music player, that's a heavy lift for a doctor to recommend that. I think we're getting there. We're in 650 nursing homes, but there are 50,000 nursing homes and assisted living facilities in the U.S., and we're hoping this movie will help people understand and want to adopt this in a big way, so that every doctor is saying, gee, you know, absolutely you should do this with your mom and dad, and every family says this is what we're going to do and make it happen.
And specifically what you're doing is you're giving personalized music, iPods with headphones, to patients in these nursing homes. Is there something specific, Dan, about giving the iPod to someone maybe who's never used a piece of machinery like this, maybe who's never had personalized music piped right into their ears?
Well, certainly. I think one of the reasons why we just haven't thought of this is because our elders, maybe my parents, were resistant to technology and computers. So with the iPods, yeah, it takes a technological bent. But our approach is, you know, figure out what music they love and give it to them, and we'll take care of the rest. And that makes it easy. And then, so yes, if it's the first time someone's hearing, you know, first time putting headphones on, let's say, but if it's the music that they love, you know, Kate Smith singing God Bless America or something, boy, they'll light up, or you know, other songs that are just that they dance to at socials or the wedding song or you know, when they're hanging out with their friends listening on the radio. So you know, there's tremendous potential for this to take off that way.
Dr. Sacks, how long lasting are the effects of, say, playing a favorite song from childhood for an Alzheimer's patient? Is it something that sparks memory for a short period of time while the music is playing and then it erodes? Or is it something that over time can build back up memories?
Well, it certainly doesn't turn off instantly. and there may be an hour or two when the person is activated and much more talkative. I think it's an open question as to whether, on a wider timescale, things work. This is in contrast to the effects of music on people with Parkinson's, where the effect is instantaneously on or off. But there's a clear residue for people with Alzheimer's. They're in the mood, and the associations have started going, and their brain is in a different state for some hours.
Now, in the movie, and in a lot of nursing homes, there are musicians who come in and play music that the patients are not familiar with. Dr. Sachs, first you, and then I'd like to hear Dan's take, too. But what are the therapeutic benefits of this, of just hearing any music played directly to you?
In a way, music therapy started in the First World War when there were wounded veterans and in great pain, and musicians would come in and could be of great help. There's now a very well-established discipline of music therapists. Music therapists are very skilled. They will also establish an immediate human relationship with the people. I think almost everyone responds to some music, even if they don't know it, and it may be a delight to be introduced to music.
And Dan, I'd love to hear your take on this, because in part this personalized music that you talk about is so powerful, but so is the flute player who in the movie comes in and spends time with the patients. And sometimes I wonder in watching it if it's about the music, the personalized music, or if it's just about the attention, the one-on-one attention that sometimes these people are getting for the first time in quite some time.
You know, this is not an either-or proposition. We need both. We need more of both. And you're exactly right. It is that interactivity. I mean, people aren't getting visitors. 50% of people in nursing homes never, ever get a visitor. So if someone's there serenading them and singing their music and interacting, that's a big win. But the question is, or the problem, musicians tell me who go into nursing homes, their secret guilt is they know when they leave, then that person's going to go back into that very, insular kind of self. And so the week is long, the night is long. Gee, let's get the music, the rest of the time. Why not? So that's really the goal here.
Let's get to some phone calls. Hallie is calling from Berkeley, California. Hello, Hallie.
Yes, hi. I used to work in a nursing home in the early 80s, and I did a lot of music programs with the patients. And I had one program. We had a 200-bed facility. It was the Ulster County Nursing Home in upstate New York. And we had a 200-bed facility, and once a week I would take two patients from each of the five sections there and bring them to the music room, and we would play. I would put on old records. These were people who were in their 80s, 90s, and they were very non-communicative and didn't respond to anything. And I would put the music on, and I would hold someone's hand and sing a song and look them in the eye, and they would start singing the song with me. And these were people who didn't respond to anything at all other than that.
Hallie, thank you so much for that. It's a story that's played out over and over again in this film. I want to get quickly to Kathy, who's calling from Snyder, Texas. Hi, Kathy. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I just mainly had a comment. It's kind of sort of like Haley's. My dad had Alzheimer's for the last 7 years of his life, and we had to put him in a nursing home his last year, and he was very non-communicating, and he used to be a singer. One day I went in to visit, and the nurse came running down the hall. She said, "Your dad's in the cafeteria. He's singing. Did you know he could sing?" And I said, "Well, he used to sing." So I go down, and there's a little lady playing the piano who hadn't talked. She just walked over to the piano and started playing it, and he walked up and started singing. And so they put on a little concert for everyone, and everyone was so excited that these two people just kind of came out of their shell for the music.
Oh,
and that's why I think this movie is such a wonderful inspiration for people like me that have lost our parents.
long before they ever even died.
Kathy, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Dan, that's the sort of thing, again, you see in the movie, a man just starts singing, and you see everyone then around him in the nursing home, they all light up because they're hearing one of their colleagues, someone who they've never heard sing before, sing.
It's an amazing thing to see, actually. These folks who are all with advanced dementia themselves, and you think they're not paying any attention, they know, they feel when they see the person who's singing and enjoying their music immensely, they're all getting enjoyment out of that as well.
Dr. Sachs, do you see a time when a doctor might prescribe music as readily as he or she might prescribe a pill for an elderly patient?
Well, I think the time is very overdue. It needs to be as widely known as possible that music can be very powerful in a whole variety of conditions. And now with existing technology, you can personalize it for everybody. And it's not only often just as effective, but like 20 times cheaper than medication. So they're very good economic as well as physiological and psychological and social reasons for having readily available music for everyone who needs it, and not just for people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. For people who've lost language and who are aphasic, music can be a bridge to their. I've seen many patients who cannot utter a word, but if I start them on Happy Birthday or something, they will join in and they will discover that language is available for them, if only in a lyrics, but then it can be disembedded and used generally.
Dan Cohen, we just have a few seconds left, but I have to ask, obviously you're trying to get this into every nursing home in America, and it's a long slog. What advice do you have for people who just want to try this on a local level with their own family?
On our website, we have a how to create a personalized playlist for a loved one. They can download the free resource at musicandmemory.org. Try it. There's no downside. If it doesn't work, fine. But most of the time, it will work. We want people to donate their old iPods sitting around. We can use those. Volunteer in a nursing home. Bring yourself there. See Alive Inside and bring your family and friends and contribute to Music and Memory so that we can have the resources to get more nursing homes going.
The movie is Alive Inside, and the organization is Music and Memory. Dan Cohen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank Dr. Oliver Sachs, a professor of neurology at NYU Medical Center and the author of many books, including Musicophilia. Dr. Sachs, so good to have you here.
Lovely to be here again.